Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, and this is Cheryl Broderson, and I'm in studio, not with Robin Jones Gunn, but with Robin Jones Gunn's friend and my friend, Mary Perro. And I love having Mary in here. Robin, I love Mary. She's an author herself. She's a worship leader. She's a dynamic communicator. And we are, like, I just feel so privileged to have you in studio. And as I was mentioning earlier, or the last show, we talked about how perfect it is that we're talking about Maud Kills, who was born in Northern Ireland, and that you actually lived in Ireland for a time.
I did. I was a missionary in Ireland for about 9 months, and I, at the time, thought I would stay forever. The Lord had different plans, but I'm very excited to be talking about Maud Kells with you today. We talked a little bit in our last episode about her early life and how she came to know the Lord. She was from Northern Ireland and her parents were not believers. She actually came to know the Lord through friends at nursing school who just reached out to her. They were just kind. They were friendly. It was so fun to learn more about her. And then she felt the call to go to the Congo, which at a time when was very, there was a lot of, I'm sure, civil unrest and other things going on there. It was a very dangerous place, very unstable place. And she still felt like that was something the Lord had called her to do. Would you be willing to replace some martyred missionaries? And she was, and she accepted the call. So I think we're just getting ready to hear about the very beginning parts of her time in the Congo, and I can't wait to learn more.
Yes, we ended on the part where she was on the boat and had just reached the Congo River and going to the port of Matidi.
Yes, and just exploring all the beauty.
Oh, and loved it.
Yeah.
So there were more nursing courses to take once in the Congo, as well as lessons in Swahili. You know, I had a friend from Kenya, and I said to her, she had been a professor, and I said, Philomena, do you speak Swahili? And she said, oh, yes, and about 12 other tribal languages. I was like, oh. So I didn't realize, like, Swahili is kind of just one of many.
One of many.
And amazing, but that's what Maud had to learn. Maud worked in the hospitals with these experienced doctors, but she was so saddened by the malnutrition she observed in most of the children who lived in nearby villages. And it was just criminal because the Congo is one of the richest or was one of the richest in resources countries in Africa. It's rich in cobalt, copper, diamonds, gold, silver, zinc, tin, uranium, radium, bauxite, iron, ore, and coal.
Wow.
But the people all live at poverty levels due to the unrest in the government.
Mm.
And instead of, you know, mining, taking advantage, you know, before it had been exploited, and now it was just abandoned. So, as I had said before, the first president of the independent country in 1960 had been assassinated. So in 1968, the country still had at least the infrastructure that was left by the Belgians, the Belgian government. And that was a good infrastructure of roads and roadways. However, and coffee estates and cotton estates employed by a lot of expats. So there were, you know, other English people, Dutch. There were Belgian people that stayed in the country and kind of kept some stability and kept the people employed through these estates and these manufacturing plants. However, the government continued to be constantly overthrown, and every time the government was overthrown, because they would blow up roads and they would blow up bridges, the infrastructure would crumble just a little bit more. And it wasn't so much, you know, because it was rebels and army, and it wasn't the rebels or the army that was hurt as much as just the people, the women, the children, the innocents, and those who lived in the outlying villages. So Maud's first months were spent in a place called Wamba, And she was training there in more nursing school courses, especially ones that had to do that specialized in what the majority of issues were, because these pregnant women that were coming in were usually malnutrition, and they had to have other methods. There were quite a few breech babies, and learning Swahili. She also had to learn pharmaceutical skills.
Oh, my.
How to make mixtures. And some of their mixtures were actually with, like, some of the native plants in the Congo, as well as taking, you know, well, we need 3 cc's of this and 2 cc's of this, and putting the right mixtures together, which is, it's, you know, I mean, think, people go like 8 years to college.
Yeah.
To learn how to make the right mixes for medicine. And she had to do those compounds herself.
Fascinating. And that she was including what was locally available and perhaps, you know, wonderful.
Yes. And learning all these things. But she just said, Lord, this is way above my pay grade.
Yes.
You know, I wasn't trained for this. I don't feel confident in this.
I think I've told the Lord that a few times.
And the Lord met her with, I bet you know, 2 Corinthians 12:9. Mm. My grace is sufficient for you.
Amen.
Around this time, Maud became acquainted with the MAF, or Missionary Aviation Flyers.
Oh, yes.
And she got really close. And of course, she and the other missionaries became so dependent on these valiant pilots. We'll talk about that more. But in time to come, these men would become indispensable to her and their skills.
So I don't want to detract from the story, since we're going to talk more about that. But is this related to the same, like, MAF that was doing a lot of the, like, Nate Saint and same organization?
Same organization, but this one's in Africa.
This one, got
and
it.
And that one's in South America.
Okay, that's what I needed to know.
Yep, I know.
I love that.
They were all over. They were amazing. So for the following year of 1970, Maud worked at various hospitals, helped set up and assist at traveling clinics, went to church services, and adjusted to life in the Congo. And she also had the opportunity to go to a conference where her hero, Dr. Helen Roosevelt, was sharing. And she got to meet Dr. Helen Roosevelt, and they hit it off.
Oh.
And a lifelong friendship began. It was just kind of incited, and it will develop more.
That's what we all want, isn't it?
I
to meet
it.
Our hero and start a lifelong friendship. And so, just as a reminder, Dr. Helen
Roosevelt,
mm-hmm. she had served in Congo, and that had been the thing that had drawn in Maud. So,
exactly.
And now they're both there.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Helen Roosevelt had built hospitals. In fact, the hospital that they're at, that she served at, was there and built by Dr. Helen Roosevelt. She raised the funds. She put
Incredible.
It together. She's also wrote a training book in Swahili for, so she started training doctors. She set up a medical school where she trained doctors and she trained nurses. And what's interesting too, I mean, this is going way off my notes here, but when she set up these schools and they tested, her schools tested the highest.
Amazing. So I need to go back and listen to her episode.
Oh yeah. She's amazing. I fell in love with her too. Well, it was 6 months serving before Maud got all her luggage. And when her bigger suitcase finally got to her with some of her medical supplies and things she needed, and she opened it, she was dismayed to find that a jar of strawberry jam had broken and made all of the contents super, super sticky, including her sewing machine.
Oh, no.
And some medical equipment, but they were able to clean it up and get the stick off of it. She was able to use it. But it's interesting that, you know, a sewing machine would be among the things that she would bring to the Congo. And I wonder if it was just a treadle.
I was thinking about that as well. Like, how is she plugging this thing in?
I know.
How is this going to work?
So Maud served in Wamba for 3 years, training in all the obstetric procedures that were indicative to the women there. She learned and perfected her Swahili, and she was just adjusting to the culture and even the food. And she had agreed. So missionary terms, when you signed up with the WEC, you signed up to serve for at least 5 years without a break, without a furlough, that you were going to serve 5 years because they felt it took 5 years to totally adjust and to get rid of all the longings for home, so to speak. So she was determined that she was going to stick it out all 5 years, come what may. She was dedicated. She was going to be there when an urgent letter from her father reached her in Wamba. And she found out that her mother, who was 20 years younger than her father, had had a stroke. And her father, because he was older, was unable to care for her. One of her sisters had gone to Canada. And so she couldn't take care of, obviously, the mother. The other one, Margaret, was married and had children. And he just felt so all alone. And one of her sisters, Irene, had was sick herself. So there was nobody to take care of her mom. And he said, you have to. You know, you're our daughter. You studied nursing. You owe it to us. Well, she was really conflicted. And yes. So she went to those who were her superiors, and she just laid out everything, and they prayed, and they said to her, we feel that God would have you honor your mother and father in this instance. We don't usually say this, but this is what we're feeling. And that was pretty much what she felt, even though she didn't want to leave. Well, in May of 1971, she's 32 years old. She's able to fly back to Ireland. And part of that is because the MAF pilots were able to fly her to a major airport where she was able then to fly to Ireland. Now, before she had had to take the ship, it was, you know, over 3 weeks getting to the port in the Congo. But now she's able to fly. And when she got to Ireland, and I just love this, a WEC representative in Belfast picked her up and drove her straight to the hospital where her mother was. So what you see here is that the WEC takes care of their missionary.
Yes, they're supporting her. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they care.
On both sides.
Exactly. And so when she got to the hospital, she found out that the situation with her mother was more critical than she realized. Her mother also had inoperable cancer and didn't have long to live. Oh. So the mother was sent home, and Maud began taking care of her, you know, and making food for her father and just taking care of both her father and mother. And every day, as was her practice, she would read the scripture out loud to her mom and pray. And she didn't know how her mom felt about that, but she just did it every day. And one night she just forgot, you know, just things got busy. And her mother said to her, you forgot to read and pray with me last night. Now, don't you go forgetting tonight. And Maud realized that her mother had come to know the Lord.
Wow.
And that the Lord had wanted her to take care of her mother. And she felt like, I came back to see my mom saved. This is why the Lord brought me back. So she's thinking, okay. In August of 1971, Maud's mother passed away. And Maud made plans to return to the Congo when she got another request from her father. Her father was frail and in his late 80s. And he said, Maud, I want you to stay and take care of me now because I'm old and I don't know how much longer I have. And she felt like the Lord said, this is what you're supposed to do right now. So she agreed. At the same time, she took a part-time nursing job working in a maternity ward at a local hospital for 6 months. And one of the reasons she did that is because her father could no longer afford or work the farm. And so they needed
the
an
support,
income,
yeah.
The support. So she supported him not only by taking care of him, feeding him, watching over him, but also by working in this hospital. While she was working at that hospital for 6 months, this young man came in who had terminal cancer, and he was a father with little children. And she was able to minister to this father and bring him to the Lord Jesus and, you know, talk to his wife and children. So again, she thought, okay, Lord, I see why this delay. I see why you brought me back. So Maud's father had always been resistant to hearing about Jesus or becoming a Christian. However, Maud decided she would read the Bible to him and pray out loud as she had done with her mother. Like, this is what she did. And one day she was reading Psalm 23 aloud to him. And she suddenly turned to her father and she said, "Wouldn't you like to know the Lord as your own personal shepherd?" And Maud's father nodded his head, "Yes, I would." And Maud had the pleasure of leading her father to Jesus. And in the next few weeks, she saw evidence of his salvation in his demeanor, in his happiness, in his joy.
Beautiful.
And she knew that he had really met the Lord. In fact, a few weeks later, when he was in the throes of death, the Lord gave him a vision of heaven.
Wow.
So she knew.
Yeah, I this story is speaking so much to me about trusting the Lord with when things don't go the direction
exactly.
that you were really hoping that they would go.
Right.
And she's not forcing her way. Oh, the Lord must have brought me back.
Yes.
So that I can do this. She's not sure, mm-hmm. but she's going to do what she's always done. She's going to read the word every night, and she's going to pray. And these, just being herself, the Lord was using that. And even with the young father who was dying, and then later her own father, just, I have goosebumps.
You know, there's a scripture that I love, and it says he's in the waiting.
Oh,
he's in the waiting. And I
beautiful.
Think that we often don't see God in the delays.
Mm-hmm.
We only see him in maybe the call and the objective, but we don't realize he's also in that time in between. He's in the waiting.
Yes.
And I just love that. So Maud had been vacant from the Congo for almost 4 years by this time. And she applied to return to the Congo, but by this time it was known as Zaire.
Okay.
So now we'll talk about Zaire. When she got there, she was tasked with the oversight of the maternity department at a hospital in Nebobongo. And Maud's time working in the maternity ward in Ireland gave her a wealth of experience. But she still felt insecure because now the doctors were asking, remember before she had to do pharmaceutics? Now they're saying, we need you to administer we need you to anesthetize the patients. And she's like, what? No, I don't do that.
To deliver babies.
Yes, and that is so dangerous and so tricky and so exacting. And she just said to the doctor, he was telling her to come into the surgery theater and do this with him. And the doctor turned to her and said, we all work way above our training.
Mm.
And he said, if there is no one else to do a job, don't you think God will equip you?
Ooh, that's
And the
good.
Lord did. In the 9 years since Maud had been there, in the years, the hospital had improved greatly. They had brick buildings, electricity. Two of the doctors had been personally trained by Helen Rosevere that were working there. And there were at least 2 to 3 emergency cases every day that Maud was on the front lines of. And also, she even took care of patients with leprosy, which were at a special branch of that hospital. And then not only did she work at the hospital, but during the week, she would travel with doctors to outlying villages and sometimes conducting, in these primitive conditions, over 100 surgeries in 1 week.
Oh, my.
And on these outreaches, they would usually work in a whitewashed mud hut with a big torch to help them see. Like, she would have to sometimes hold the torch so the doctor could see what he was doing. And they would eat whatever the people served them. And the meals usually consisted of cassava, which they called samba, served with some type of meat and maybe rice and corn. And they didn't always know what the meat was. And Maud's digestive system did not always cooperate or agree with what she ate.
The Lord equipped her to do the work, but her digestive system just
yes,
didn't cooperate.
Sometimes didn't follow suit. But, you know, I love the fact that even when she just was so willing to accept whatever was given her. Like, this is where I am. This is how they live. This is how I'm going to live. This is just what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just get on with it. This is how we do it. This is what we do. In 1974, she was asked to move to a remote village called Mulita. And the former field leader, Jim Granger, who had been serving there with his wife, Ida, died suddenly of a heart attack. But his wife stayed on and asked the WEC if they knew anyone who was willing to help her with the load and the medical care. So she realized that she would need some form of transportation because Mulita was way, way out in the Tules. In fact, just to get there, if you were going there by road, you were going over log bridges with that were infested with crocodiles.
Oh, my.
So, you know, we never talk about all the dangerous animals that were there. She never mentions those.
Yeah.
You know, about the snakes. She said, none of those bothered me. Snakes, wild animals, lions, nothing bothered me but rats and mice. Those were like her greatest fear. Not even soldiers or marauding robbers, just mice and rats.
So she had been in a hospital which had a lot of people, electricity, a lot of updates, mm-hmm. a lot of other, it sounds mm-hmm. like,
yes.
believers, people serving. And now she's
going to this remote village, Mulita.
Next step.
And she's supposed to set up some kind of medical station also. So, as I said, the church in Molesworth had sent money, they had exported from Ireland a Land Rover for her to pick up in Babongo and drive to Valida. So she's driving and she's kind of in a little convoy. And the driver ahead of her, she had a flat tire. They had to change it. And he got really impatient with her. So he was speeding. So she felt like, I don't want to leave them behind. So she started speeding up to keep up with him. And the driver behind her was not going that fast. He's just watching everything. And suddenly she rolled the Jeep, the Land Rover, 7 times.
Oh, no.
And miraculously, she and the man who was traveling with her walked away from the accident.
Oh, my goodness.
But the Land Rover was absolutely totaled. And she felt like she had no one else to blame. So instead of taking a Land Rover, she was flown by the MAF pilots to Mulita. And she said she was known for such a time and so embarrassed. Like, oh, are you the woman that rolled the Land Rover?
Right, right. And how terrible you'd feel like your church said this over.
I know.
Accidents happen, right?
It does. And she felt so bad. And she said if she hadn't been speeding, it wouldn't have happened. And she had already crossed all these log bridges and was so proud of herself and how the Lord had sustained her so far.
Yes.
So on May 16th, 1976, Maud landed in Mulita. And Mulita was the least populated, poorest, and most isolated province in Zaire. And the conditions were incredibly primitive. And chimpanzees played on the airstrip, and it rained constantly. The hospital there was a mud building with a leaf and stick roof, and one small brick building was the outpatient facility. The leprosarium was a series of mud huts about a kilometer away from the main hospital. And remember, at that time, leprosy was still very contagious. There were other mud huts that comprised the Bible school, another mud building that was the primary school but had no teachers, and finally an incomplete brick building that served as the church. But the believers there were precious, were precious, and so kind. Ida Granger lived in a dilapidated brick house, which she invited Maud to share, because that meant that people could come and, you know, meet her. They ate the samba, the cassava mainly, but the Grangers had also planted gardens and had fruit trees. So she was able to also eat some fruit. The only fruit that she said that didn't grow there well was like guava. But she had bananas and she had all sorts of other fruits. That's mainly, she said she and Ida became vegetarians because a lot of the meat that was given to them was from questionable sources.
Mm-hmm.
But the people were so sweet. They go out and whatever they found in the forest, they would bring to them. And sometimes it really smelled bad. But they just loved it. So 3 months after moving to Melita, Ida felt called to retire and move back to Australia. And though some missionaries felt uneasy about Maud being alone in such a remote area, Maud had no qualms. She was used to living without electricity, and so she made her meals at an outside kitchen using a metal top brick stove with a fire burning underneath it. So we're going to talk more about what life was like in Melita and then some of the adventures and some of the drama that went on in episode 3 of Maud Kills.
Can't wait.
Thank you listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.